Good morning, West Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. This is Spectrum West. Hi, everybody. Al Ross at the turn of the month. It's kind of the hump day of the month, if you think about it. This is Spectrum West, and Mother Banjo is here today. Sunday, Mother Banjo, or Ellen Stanley, will be in Stockholm at the Wide Spot for a special performance. We'll talk about that and about the love of the oatmeal cookie kind of folk music. Jim Oliver welcomes back Karen Hurd of Community Arts for a preview of her newest venture. Mr. Oliver will also reveal what's on stages around these parts. We'll say goodbye to Edie Gourmet in the only appropriate way. We'll let her sing for us. After hearing a song introduction cut from a 1984 phone conversation I had with she and hubby Steve Lawrence during my time in Milwaukee, we inaugurate this version of Spectrum West right here. How can you fail to notice a word like boondocks? It's a nine-letter combination that begs you to find out more, so I did. Boondocks are rough duck decoys hewn out of old, discarded, recycled pieces of wood. But it's the man who does it that is our focal point, probably because he has a disability that would cause one to question how the heck he makes these things, and how the heck he writes so well, and how the heck he played football and basketball and took hunter safety and skied the Berkey 20 times. You see, he's, as they say, legally blind and has been for many years. His name is Dan Sullivan, Sully for short. He writes books under the pen name D.S. Sully. He's a good example of the fact that there's vision and there's vision. Well, first we should arrange your stage a bit and tell folks about the hurdles that you've had to jump and continue to jump to do what you do. Let's focus on the word vision. If you look it up, it has at least a couple meanings. One is imagination and, oddly enough, foresight. That has the word sight in it, like insight, which you also have a bunch of. But the other definition of vision is eyesight, and that's where you're challenged. We'd like to hear a bit of your story as it regards your lack of vision. Tell us about that.
Well, when it comes to vision, I think the mistake a lot of people make is they think it's all or nothing. They don't quite understand in between 20/20 and totally blind. And I grew up with a disorder called Stargardt's, and it's a form of macular degeneration, something you normally don't see until you hit 70 or 80. So I just tell people I'm well ahead of my time. But it's a situation that hits like two or three in the family. It's genetic. And what it does, it affects your central vision, not your peripheral. But central is what you use to look at details, to read, to drive, all those kind of things, whereas your peripheral is what you use to get glimpses and glances around. So one of the most difficult hurdles for me was that I don't appear to have a vision problem when you see me walking about doing things. So when I try to explain to people that I can't read that newspaper or see a certain sign, I've had people say to me, gosh, you seem so normal.
You made it through academics. You know, in high school, you participated in football, track, and basketball. You became certified in hunter safety. You did the Berkey many times, so doesn't sound like it held you back any.
Well, sometimes it's good to be kind of naive or just maybe defiant. You mentioned things like that. The Berkey, I did for 20 years, but I was always in kind of terrified that if someone found out what my real visual acuity was, they would pull me out of the race or something, although I finished in the upper half every year. But you have funny things happen, too, how, you know, sometimes people will stigmatize you and others will reach out, and you mentioned hunter safety. You know, I whizzed through that course. You grow up in a small town, Wisconsin, you better, if you don't hunt, you don't have much to talk about. And so, you know, I was in a small town, and I was going to hunt like everybody else, took the hunter safety course, and then came the time for the target range. And that small little 22 target at the far end, instructor wanted to know why I wasn't hitting it. And I said, I'm just having trouble seeing it. And I thought, that's it. I'm going to fail. And what the guy did next just floored me. He turned around, walked down there, put up an archery target, and I passed.
Wow, what a guy.
Well, I don't know why.
Well, good for you. You brought up the small town, and you and I chatted a couple days ago, and you told me that you were born and raised in Dodgeville. And anybody who hears the word Dodgeville and was a basketball fan, They remember Dodgeville. It probably wouldn't pay for us to explain what happened, but Dodgeville was one of the last small towns to do very well in the state tournament and went up against lots bigger schools. I mean, there were only eight teams back then. So, as I said, people who know basketball, you say Dodgeville, they have the story.
But I got to be one of the scrubs who sat on the third string there, got to go in whenever we were up either by 20 points or down by 20 points and 1 minute to go. I can kind of laugh at it now. It was kind of bothering me when I was in high school, though. People couldn't figure out how I functioned. Like I said, I could do one thing at one time and not at another time. So somehow, and this is what kids do, they like to just focus on things. They started to call me Radar because they figured I must have some kind of sixth sense of radar that I could shoot a basketball and score a basket, yet, like I said, couldn't read a book. Hmm. And they'd do this beep, beep, beep chant every time I went out onto the floor.
Cool.
Well, I didn't think it was so cool then. I didn't want them to focus on that. But
they
now,
were,
I said, I can laugh at that was their only way of figuring out that I could play basketball.
But they were endearing themselves to you. I mean, in a cruel kind of way, but I think they probably extremely admired what you were doing. What was Dodgeville's nickname?
Dodgers.
The Dodgers, okay.
Yeah, so someone in an article now calls me the Artful Dodger.
Oh, there you go. You went to school, you went to college, you went to Whitewater. You had a 20-year career with the U.S. government, a public affairs officer with the VA. And I want to get back to coming back to Wisconsin because that's where you've been doing all your wonderful stuff. You now live in Wausau, where you write, and you carve some unique figures called Boonducks. We'll get to the quackers in a moment, but let's talk about your writing. In addition to a children's book, there are two nonfiction pieces about your life. You have a fourth in the works, I read. And the third is a fictional piece called Bum Wing that has a dose of nonfiction to it, I think, because it's about a boy who deals with some adversity, and you've been known to have some of that. You've also been known, Sully, to say that sharing details of your life has been one of the hardest things you've tackled. Why is that?
Well, yeah, my second book, which is called Glimpse, I often tell people it took me 50 years to write. Simply because it wasn't a case of denial, but more of wanting that inclusion. You know, so often, if you have any kind of limitation, people focus on that rather than what you can do. And you're always afraid of becoming that guy that's labeled that blind guy or that person in a wheelchair or that developmentally disabled person. You want people to focus on what you can do. So you're always kind of fighting that battle. And, yeah, I went through a whole lot of barriers where when subject would come up that I have a vision impairment, that then the questions would rise and people would say, well, how can you do this? How can you do that? And, again, it's so difficult to explain to people when you fall in between, when it's not all or nothing. If you say you got a vision impairment, they expect you to be a Mr. Magoo walking into a wall. And you don't want to become that Mr. Magoo.
Sure. Let's go to the Boonducks, because those are interesting to me. They're rough duck decoys made out of whatever chunks of old recycled wood is available to you. It appears they are just fun to make, plain and simple, and people love them. Did that love surprise you?
It did. Totally caught me off guard. It kind of started out as a project where I had a lot of wood laying around, and my wife finally said, you got to get rid of all this stuff, and I didn't want to throw it out. So I started one day just playing around with trying to carve it. Sooner or later, the ducks kind of evolved, and what happened was that I was working on a writing project with Very Special Arts out of Madison, and they do a contest every year with exhibition of art, and I mentioned the decoys. They said to enter them, and I did, and lo and behold, I took the top honors. And from there, it went on to being part of the Madison Festival of the Arts, and now I'm in a gallery up in Door County and a gallery in Madison.
Wow, that's a great story, and those are cool.
Well, one of the things I explain to people, too, they're a folk art version of the ducks. You mentioned the whole vision issue,
mm-hmm.
And I tell people, this is the way I see a duck. Now, I do the folk art version because when I explain to people how I see is that if there's a duck flying about, you're seeing all the feathers and the details. I'm seeing the flutter. So that when I do my decoy carving, and a lot of the galleries prefer to call them sculptures, but I emphasize the colors and the contrasts rather than those detailed feathers.
I have a collection of old decoys. For me, the rougher they are, the better.
Yeah, decoys are highly collectible, and I didn't realize just how much people like decoys. And it's not just hunters, it's naturalists and other people.
Mm-hmm.
They're one of the oldest folk art platforms that exist.
Yep. We're talking with Dan Sullivan. He goes by the name of Sully. His pseudonym for writing books is D.S. Sully. He's an artist and, as I said, an author. He has a disability but is certainly not disabled. Sully, we don't have time to expound on your Write Ability Workshop and the Give a Hoot Project. Maybe another time we'll do that because you're a fascinating guy to talk to. But let it be known that Dan Sullivan not only cares about how his life unfolds, but wants to share some inspiration with others who face hurdles. Does that kind of put in a nutshell the kinds of things you're feeling when you work with others and appear at schools and that kind of stuff?
Well, what I often tell people, the best way to deal with any kind of physical or mental challenges to reach out to others that have a similar situation.
You mentioned the VSA, and I know VSA Wisconsin is very proud of your work. It stands, of course, for Very Special Arts, as you said, where the arts and disability join forces. They like you a lot. Is it a mutual admiration thing between the two of you?
What's so great about VSA, and I mentioned before, is that you never want to be defined by a limitation, and you don't want these labels of what you can't do. And when you become involved with VSA, you suddenly are christened an artist, and then you become someone who's all about ability. And I think what happens so often is people with these challenges actually are some of the most creative people. That's how they get through life. You have to adapt by being creative, and so you can often channel that into the arts, whether it's writing or visual arts.
How do we get more information about D.S. Sully and Dan Sullivan and Sully? Is there a website?
Used to be, but I'm just not a great lover of social media. I often tell people they can just get a hold of me through my email at CelticDan@frontier.com.
Okay. And how do we get a hold of your books?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, some local bookstores, various gift shops, online resources, the publishers, which is Author House.
Well, Dan Sullivan, what you lack in physical vision, you more than make up for in philosophical vision. I will feel inadequate from now on, thanks to you, but I appreciate the perspective. It will keep me going and keep me humble.
Well, I appreciate that.
Interesting, inspiring guy. D.S. Sully is his pen name. Again, his email address is CelticDan@frontier.com. Now, back to the Dodgeville thing for just a second. The 1963 Dodgers were runners-up, and in 64 won the whole shebang by defeating a number one big school, Milwaukee North, if you remember that. Of course, the late Dodgeville coach, which adds even more to the legend, for those who know, say it with me, Weenie Wilson. Man, that is the stuff of legend. This is Spectrum West. Thanks for being with us today. Support for WPR comes from Ken Vance Honda, featuring the new 2013 Honda Civic with Eco Assist, a push button that gives real-time feedback to help develop efficient driving habits. More at kenvance.com.
Support also comes from Visit Winona, where the scenic Great River Road leads to a summer full of hiking and biking adventures, blufftop panoramas to river valley scenes. Visit Winona.com. This is the year to discover Winona's outdoors. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering home mortgage applications online, as well as information about the process, payment amounts, title insurance, mortgage insurance, and more. More at wisconsincu.org.
Spectrum Memo Tuesday Night Blues from the Chippewa Valley Blues Society presents Rhythm Posse next Tuesday, August 20th, at the Owen Park Band Shell in Eau Claire. Volume 1 presents the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series, Phoenix Park, downtown Eau Claire. Tonight, Thursday night, it's the Frenettes, the Merryweathers, and Sean Jones. First Notes will drift across the confluence at about 6:30. Next Thursday, the 22nd, it's Evergreen Grass Band, Softly Dear, and Claytown. Plus, appearing at the Volume 1 World Headquarters, Friday evening, August 16th, it's Dames from 7 to 8 p.m. Well, Jim Oliver's here with a glimpse at one of the stage productions planned and underway in our and artistically busy West Wisconsin.
Karen Hurd is a practicing nutritionist in Fall Creek. She has produced books and DVDs on various nutrition topics, and she is active in worship activities in her church. In her spare time, she writes, produces, and directs plays. Her current project is The Sea Hag's Revenge, which will play Friday through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Karen Hurd joins us by telephone to talk about her latest play. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you very much, Jim. Well, I guess we would have to call The Sea Hag's Revenge a sequel to Beowulf, a play you wrote and produced in 2012, as I recall. It's based on the epic poem of the same name, which dates back to around the year 1000. So how did you decide that the Beowulf story should continue?
Because I wanted to bring something to the public that they would be familiar with. You know, we've all seen in our English, our classic English literature courses while we were in high school and college, we've read the poem Beowulf, and we may have seen a movie Beowulf, you know, because Hollywood has done those films at times. But because I want to bring new plays to the theater, new in that they haven't been put on a stage before, I wanted to choose something that's familiar, because I've written things in the past and will continue that are very new works. People don't know the story at all. But because I am in the growing stage of being a playwright, producer, director, I wanted to bring things that would draw the public so they can see that any production that is put on by seenandheard.com is excellent. So as you come to these things, you go, look at this set. I cannot believe it. Look at the quality of this show. And so I wanted to bring something familiar to the stage so that I could draw a bigger audience.
The story obviously takes a lot of research. So where did you get started? What kind of resources did you use to
Well, what I did is I bought many books on Beowulf, and there are several translations of Beowulf, but I settled on using the one by Seamus Henley. Beowulf was written in a language that we can't understand. It's Old English, and so there is no way that I could read it, and so we have to go with the translation. So I read Beowulf by many different translators and then settled on the Henley version of it, and then I began to write. And so I certainly am following the story just the way it is, but I had to take a little bit of writer's license to get the story to come together and to make the points that you're trying to make. So there are three, you know, parts to Beowulf's story, so this will be the second part.
So I gather then that there will be a third.
Yes, there is a third, and it is called The Dragon.
When will that come out?
It'll be this time next year. We will put on The Dragon at the State Theater.
Ah, okay. Just out of curiosity, you know, you've done a lot of different shows. This falls into the category of your action-adventure plays. But you've done some historic plays as well. Are any of those in the offing at all, in addition to your passion plays, of course?
Oh, I do the passion plays, too. I've done the Lumber Baron. Oh, I've done many. I've done the Lumber Baron. I've done the Threshing. I've done many, many historical plays. And I would like to do some of those again, too. But I'm trying to build up my repertoire of the action-adventure plays right now. So I'm doing a series of King Arthur shows. Then we're doing the Beowulf, and then I'm also starting this fall. As soon as we close on Beowulf, we'll be going into Robin Hood, and I'll be doing a series of Robin Hood shows. Because my long-term goal is that I would like to sell these scripts and plays to high schools so that high schools can put these on, because they're thrilling and they're wonderful. They supplement the English literature class, and so that you can live out Beowulf, and so it's not this dry and dusty old English poem that you have to read for your teacher. It's like, let's play it out, and let's play it out with some sword play, too. And so I'd like to get these out across the country to high school. So once I get that repertoire built up, I think I might go back to my historical plays.
Mm-hmm. She is Karen Hurd, who is playwright and producer and director of The Sea Hag's Revenge. The show runs Friday through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Well, what is The Sea Hag's Revenge all about?
It is the second part of the poem of Beowulf. Beowulf, in the first part, has come from Jotland, which is the southern part of Sweden, to Denmark, because there is a monster that dwells there in Denmark and terrorizes the people of Heorot. This is a grand hall that was built by the king Hrothgar. And Grendel is the name of the monster. And Beowulf was able to kill and destroy the monster Grendel. But unbeknownst to Beowulf, and unbeknownst to the king and the people there, Grendel has a mother, and she is the sea hag. And she finds the body of her dead son, and she is not happy, and she is going to take revenge. And so she comes to attack the people, and Beowulf is hard-pressed to not meet his doom as he faces the sea hag.
Well, there's music and there are fight scenes. So talk about
lots of music, lots of fight scenes.
Okay, talk about the who wrote the music, and then we'll get into the choreography or the fight scenes later.
The writer of the music is an extremely talented man. His name is Ethan Wickman. He taught at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire for several years. He teaches music composition. He has his doctorate in music composition. And he's just recently, in the past year, taken a position at the University of Texas in San Antonio. So he and I are working back and forth through digital means, computer and, you know, email, Skype, and all the rest of it, as we work on the music for Sea Hag's Revenge. But that music's done, but he's also writing the music for Robin Hood, and we're thick in the middle of Robin Hood right now, getting that script finished and that music finished. And then the fight choreography is being done by Reed Brown. He is an instructor at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. He teaches stage movement, directorship, playwriting. He does a lot of classes there. He's an outstanding professor, and he is wonderful at the fight choreography. So he has trained these people and drilled them until they are at combat speed. So this looks real and scary. But we all know that are on the stage, it's very safe because we've been working a long time, so no one gets hurt.
You know, you mentioned that you're working already on Robin Hood, the music, and everything. How do you keep all this stuff separate? Not to mention your day job, but still, I'm assuming, directing and doing the work on the production of The Sea Hag's Revenge, but yet you're still working on Robin Hood. How do you separate your time?
They're different jobs, actually. When you're in production, we are in production with The Sea Hag's Revenge. So that takes my time at the theater where we're practicing those evenings where we go through with the actors and drill lines and drill fights and that. And then in my mornings is when I write. I have time set aside in the morning, and then I take every Monday off, and that is my write day. And I write lyrics, I write plays, I write every kind. I'm writing books for my nutrition practice, so I do a lot of writing on that day.
There was a time, as I recall, when one of the first times we spoke, you were writing a historic column. Are you still doing that?
I am still doing that. I have just completed. I started in the year 2001? Was it 2001 or 2003? Anyway, I've been doing it for over a decade, a long time ago I started. So I write that every week. So that's published. It comes out on Thursday in the Augusta Area Times.
Now, you said that Robin Hood is the next show on the community arts agenda. What follows after that?
What follows after that is the Knights of the Round Table. And this will be the third in a series of King Arthur shows. We did Excalibur first, and then we did King Arthur last year. Now we'll be doing the Knights of the Round Table.
And then there will be a passion play, I assume?
Yes, and that's entitled Simon of Cyrene. So it's the passion as seen through the eyes of that Jewish man that had traveled to Jerusalem at the time of the Passover and what occurs there.
Are you writing on that already?
No, I'm not writing on it. But, I mean, I have outlines of what I do, but I don't actually put pen to paper until I get closer. Because I'm too busy with Sea Hag right now and writing Robin Hood.
Well, I thought I'd push you over the edge here a little bit.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jim.
You've been writing and producing plays for a long time. I'm not going to say how long, I guess.
But 17 years.
17 years. Okay, well, that's a while. So what got you started on this journey of yours?
I want to bring good messages and wholesome plays and productions to the community. So much is seedy. It's just things. It's like, really, you want that to be shown in public? And so I want to bring things that are exciting, because Beowulf is exciting, and you're going to say, well, they're fighting. Do you know what, Jim? I think we need to be raising up warriors, people to stand for what they believe, people to not be bowled over by circumstances and, you know, someone that might stand in opposition to them. And so our young men and our young women, they all of us have this warrior spirit deep inside of us, and I want us to be able to see that and use it in a positive way, not in a destructive way to go out and, you know, commit crimes or anything, but to protect our own and to protect our values. And so all of my plays, you're not going to find any bad words in them. There is no sexual innuendos. I mean, you can certainly have a love story, but there's not what we see on TV and in the movies today. Not at all. You're not going to see people making out on the stage. None of that happens. But you're going to be caught up in the action and the wonder and just the glory of living life to the fullest. That's what got me started, is because I want to see a change. And so if I want to see the change, I can stand outside and I can throw stones at the glass tower, or I can get in there and be a part of making the change. And that's what I want to do.
Say one other thing. I always ask a frivolous question of people who write and direct and produce and things. Have you ever done any acting?
Oh, yes. I think that every director has to be an actor, because you might have to show your actor, this is what I'm trying to convey here. Watch me, you know, do this scene. Sure. This is what I'm trying to get across with this expression. Oh, yes, I played Snoopy in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. You know, it's supper time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's supper time, and when supper time comes, can supper be far away? Yeah, all that type of stuff. And I played the lead role in high school plays, and but now that I'm directing, I don't have time actually to act, you know, to try out in a play and act, because I'm so busy.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm acting as I'm directing.
Well, that's true. So, well, we've been visiting with Karen Hurd, who is a playwright and director of The Sea Hag's Revenge, a production of Community Arts of Fall Creek. The show runs Friday through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. For ticket information, call 715-832-ARTS. Karen Hurd, thanks so much for coming back to talk to us.
Thank you so much.
Spectrum West for the 15th day of August. I'm Al Ross. Appreciative that you're with us. Sports with an artistic flair, the Menominee Blue Caps Vintage Baseball Team hosts the crew from Channel 13 in Eau Claire in a fundraiser for the Dunn County Historical Society next Wednesday. It's the 21st, 6 p.m. at Wakanda Park. That is in Menominee. The Chill on the Hill Summer Concert Series at UW River Falls has concluded. Thanks to everyone who attended, and watch out for next year at the Melvin Wall Amphitheater on the UW River Falls campus. And Ladysmith, the Music in the Park summer season has a few more weeks. Tonight, Thursday night, it's Simple Gifts and the Cheaters. Bring a lawn chair to Memorial Park in Ladysmith, Thursday evenings at 6. Sponsored by the Rusk Area Arts Alliance and the Greater Ladysmith Area Chamber of Commerce. More Spectrum memoranda. Tonight, Thursday night, it's the Big Bradys and Gentlemen Feet. Brady Swenson and Jerry Way, 7:30 at the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. And Sunday at 3 p.m., Chicago-based singer-songwriter Susan Werner returns to the Heidi. It's called the Hayseed Project, celebrating the family farm. SusanWerner.com is where you can get more information about her. It's also Chill on the Hill for Kids at the Heidi Center, featuring sports dance with Deborah Lang, next Tuesday, August 20th, 11 a.m. All Heidi Center information can be found online at info@cvca.net. Saturday and Sunday, check out the Comedy of Errors, Shakespeare's hilarious comedy of mistaken identity, performed at the Northern Lake Center for the Arts in Amory, 7:30 p.m. Information at 268-6811. Mother Banjo. Now that's a neat name, and that's how Ellen Stanley is known to many folks in and around Midwest music circles. They, meaning she and her five-piece band, released a latest CD earlier this year. It's called The Devil Hasn't Won. She loves to feel and nurture the very roots of folk music, the basic wood stove baked bread variety with a twist. And she's appearing Sunday evening at the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. She writes a lot of music, and in whatever spare time she can find, she donates some time to a Twin Cities community radio station. Here's the dialogue we shared just the other day. We share two passions, the banjo and broadcasting. however, you, Ellen, are a volunteer, and that trumps my experience. It's a community radio station where you work. Tell me how the radio thing came about.
Well, I started getting involved with radio in college. I went to Oberlin College in Ohio, and I was just a real big music fan and just starting to get into folk and bluegrass music kind of at the end of high school. And so I was so excited about the music. I really wanted to share it with other people. And when I went to college, I just got involved with the radio station my very first semester and continued to host the show all 4 years. when I moved to Twin Cities, I wanted to get involved with radio again, and I knew that there's a lot of great public radio in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I got involved with KFAI right away, which is a community radio station, all volunteer, just a small staff to keep it going, mm-hmm. and it's full of specialty shows. So I cool. had the opportunity to apply for a women's folk and acoustic show, which is a similar format to what I did in college, and I've been hosting it ever since, so about wow. 10 years.
Do you get to perform on your own show?
I don't. I think I did once, actually, for a pledge drive when I had just started playing the banjo and I was very bad. It was kind of the teaser we used all show. And then I played, like, a couple bars of, like, Cripple Creek or something. But but no, normally I do not play on my show. I've played on other people's shows.
Sure.
But I wouldn't play on my own, and I don't play my own music. There's enough great music out there.
Well, quickly, let's refresh people's Ellen Stanley file with how you began playing music and chose the style you did. When did the banjo creep in?
I was classically trained originally on mm-hmm. piano and then oboe, and I sang my whole growing up, mainly choral stuff. But as I said, I got more into sort of the folk and rootsy stuff at the end of high school, or at least getting to know the contemporary folk scene. I was raised on the kind of 60s folk stuff. But I was really interested in the authenticity and the sort of acoustic, spare quality of folk and roots music. So I got really into that. The problem was is I didn't play a stringed instrument, a good folk instrument that was portable. So I kind of half-heartedly learned some guitar chords here and there from my dad. But I didn't have an instrument, so I never really stuck with it. And then in college, I kind of got into radio and promoting other people's music. So I kind of stepped away from performing. But when I moved to the Twin Cities, I was really missing sort of having that creative outlet, and I didn't have a whole network of people to accompany me to play music and to sing the kind of music I wanted to sing, which was folk and country. And so I thought, well, this is silly. I should just learn how to play another instrument. So I bought a banjo, and I figured the world was full with enough mediocre guitar players. They didn't need another one of those, but I figured they did need another mediocre banjo player.
Yeah.
So I picked up the banjo mainly because I always loved the sound, especially in the sort of old-timey Appalachian style of playing. People always joke about how you can't play a sad song on the banjo, and that might be true for bluegrass music. Everything sounds happy, even if the content is not.
Yep.
But with that old-timey stuff, a lot of it is very spare and modal, and it kind of has a minor dark quality.
Yep.
And I always liked that. I liked the space in the banjo because there's no sustained notes. So I thought that was a really cool thing to play with, and that it's basically a percussion instrument. And so my style of playing really, although I initially learned three-finger bluegrass style, and I do play that, it's just very slowed down. So most people don't recognize it as a bluegrass style, but I do play a pick in that way and do some Doc Watson two-finger picking. But a lot of what I do is, especially when I play with the band, as I do on my new record, I do a lot more percussive playing where it's all downstroke, and playing notes in between. So it's a little reminiscent of clawhammer, wearing picks, and I'm hitting the head of the banjo. So I'm playing on the backbeat, so you get a kind of more drum-like sound out of it, which I think is a really cool quality that you only get with a banjo.
The devil has won. Life has just begun. Gonna jump up, up for joy. Cause the devil has won.
Basically a snare drum, but you're right, you could definitely add on some extra doodads to make it even more so.
I mean, it is basically a tambourine that has a bridge on it.
Exactly, so you could put those, but you definitely could add some jingles to it, I bet. That would make it
you
pretty exciting.
Should. I think you ought to do that. Come on, get on it.
I think a great idea is being born here right now.
Okay, well, we'll call it the, we'll just combine our names.
We'll call it Ross Joe or something like that.
Sure, or Joe Roll.
Cobro. Oh, I like that. That's
yeah,
good.
That's yeah, that's cool. And when it gets as big as Microsoft, we'll remember this conversation.
Yeah. You keep this recording.
Yeah. You do write a lot of stuff. When you do that, when you were talking about, you know, you were raised on 60s folk and, you know, the grassroots kind of stuff. When you write your stuff, is it important for you to adhere to that kind of character?
Well, it was a little more on the gospel record. I don't know that I always sort of adhere to a format. I think my originals range a lot from stuff that sounds almost like it could be a popish song if it was produced differently to a song that sounds like a folk or country song. But the new record, because it's all gospel material and that was the intent, obviously there's some traditional music. There's actually less original music than on most of my records. But when I write in that sort of gospel style and a song like We Are Witness, there's a lot of repetition of lines. It's meant to be a simple song that everyone can sing and jam along on because that's the spirit of the music. And so in that way, I really am sort of trying to stay to at least a sort of style or format.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing specific, except I love those kinds of songs that can really just be totally different depending on who's singing them and who's playing them. And it's true when I perform them on stage, it's really great because whether I have a band or whether I'm sitting with other people or whether the audience is singing or playing along, the song can take on a different shape depending on who's singing it with me, who's playing it with me.
Uh-huh.
So I like that. But I do like writing in that sort of gospel fashion where you're repeating every other line in the verse. So you have to be very economical with your words. You know,
sure.
You have to get to your point really quickly. You don't have the luxury of being really wordy and overly metaphorical. You know, you kind of have to be to the point, but yet still say something that will speak to people.
Yeah,
so I
mean,
kind of like it. It's a little puzzle, you know?
Yeah, it has to be like an oatmeal cookie, not a wedding cake. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And to really get a really great oatmeal cookie is more challenging than you think, you
yes.
know, whereas a cake, there's so many elements you can dress it up, you
right,
know,
right.
But when you have something really simple, it's hard to perfect a good oatmeal cookie. At least it has been for me.
So oatmeal cookie would be a great name for your next CD. Just
oatmeal cookie.
Just thinking.
Wow, Al, you have all the great ideas.
Yeah, they
apparently we need to be talking much more frequently.
Yeah, I think so. Ellen Stanley, we're talking with AKA Mother Banjo. The Mother Banjo Band has a new CD out called The Devil Hasn't Won. Ellen is at the Widespot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm Sunday. The title, The Devil Hasn't Won, sounds to me like there's more to that title than just something cool to call a CD. Although I did pop in the CD before I called you, that song, as I was skimming through them all, turned out to be one of my favorites. Even though it's awfully short, it has all these cool slides and stuff on it.
Yeah, that's the producer, Steve Call, a really great player from the cities. He plays in a band called the Brass Kings and did such a great job producing the record. That's his amazing guitar playing. But yeah, the album title, the seed was planted from my previous recording, Stray Songs, was a collection of noirish story songs about ne'er-do-wells, so sinners and cheaters and mm-hmm. whatnot. And that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to do this gospel record. It feels like the sort of flip side of that. But that had a very different tone to the album. It was, again, very intimate and confessional, much more stripped-down recording. And this, I always knew I wanted this to be, you know, a band record, a jubilant, feel-good album. But the last song on my previous record actually ended with that line, The Devil Hasn't Won, and it's sort of a song about redemption. And I thought, that's kind of a perfect tone of what I want this record to be, is
mm-hmm.
not necessarily the devil as just a figure, but really in a broader way. I'm kind of an optimist by nature, and I believe that we can overcome our darkest demons. And so I really felt like it got at the spirit of what the record was going to be. And then when I decided I was going to call it that, I actually wrote the song for the album. And that song in particular does have that sort of spirit of joy, and also gets back at one of my favorite forms of gospel music, which is that sort of foot stomping, really raw, sort mm-hmm. of spiritual that comes out of the South. I really wanted that style of gospel music represented because I love that music. So I wanted that kind of tone on the record.
Yeah. Are you looking forward to being Grandmother Banjo someday?
Who knows? Yeah, I guess. Although, you know, I'm not technically a mother yet, just a mother of my songs. And actually the band always jokes that I'm the, you know, the mother hen of the band. So.
Sure. Well, mother hen, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, that doesn't sound as good. So.
Now, you know, we don't have time to read the title of what your show is being called at the Widespot, But it sounds like an interesting evening. Tell us about what's going on there. It's kind of a radio show interviewee thing.
Yeah, it's really cool. Kelly, who's been the genius behind the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center, had this great idea and got a grant to pursue this wonderful idea of doing a variety radio show taped live and then aired as a podcast with all kind of regional artists. And I'm the guinea pig. We are launching it, which will be really fun because, as you know, I love radio and I love doing this kind of eclectic kind of performance. So what will happen, it's called Going Coastal, broadcasting from the shores of Lake Pepin. Basically, the first hour will be the sort of radio show portion. So it will be some interview with me. I'll be playing a few songs during that time. There'll be some other kinds of entertainment for that first hour. And then we're going to take a break, and then I'll play a whole set with the trio version of my band. So we'll have guitar, piano, and three-part harmonies. And so we're going to sing a lot of stuff from the new record in that second set. So you'll get to hear me both solo as well as with the band.
Cool. That's Sunday evening, yep.
Sunday evening at 7, and there's also discounted tickets for kids. So it's great for the whole family.
Cool. Well, this has been fun, Ellen. I always enjoy talking with you, and I look forward to the next time because there are some questions I didn't get to, but I don't have time. And that I like that because then it makes me anticipate the next time we chat.
That sounds good. And I look forward to your next big idea for Mother Banjo.
Yeah, I'll shower you with them via email.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks a lot, Al.
Take care.
Bye.
We are witness to love and life. We are witness in the darkest night. We are witness to love and life. We are witness to this day.
That's Ellen Stanley, Mother Banjo, Sunday evening in Stockholm at the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center. 7 o'clock, tickets at the door. WideSpotPerformingArts.org is their website. Tickets at the door, I'm taking that for granted. But if you want to try to get a ticket before Sunday, that's the address online, WideSpotPerformingArts.org. This is Spectrum West. My name is Al Ross. What's yours? Thanks for being with us. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Simply Dunn in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery in a local and fair trade gallery. Details at simply-dunn.com.
Support also comes from Festival Foods, dedicated to making grocery shopping easier for all shoppers with the introduction of pink, yellow, and green boomerang buy tags throughout the store. Festival Foods, a Wisconsin-grown company.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. Annie Get Your Gun, a production of the Willow River Players, is playing this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and the following Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the New Richmond High School Auditorium. The Bare Bones Ensemble Theater will present Baby with the Bathwater Friday and Saturday at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. The community arts production of The Sea Hag's Revenge runs through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Almost Paradise, an original production, will be presented Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Art Barn in Osceola. Cumberland ETC will present Over the River and Through the Woods August 21st through the 24th. Bingo the Musical is playing at Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show runs through August 25th.
Productions of Crazy for You and The Foreigner are playing at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls. Crazy for You will run through Sunday. The Foreigner runs through August 25th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
And that's what's on stage. Spectrum Memo, Poetry and Place, Another Kind of Mapping, is a discussion series led by Wisconsin Poet Laureate Max Garland, Wednesday mornings, August 21st and 28th at the L.A. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. The Menominee Singers holding auditions for all sections Thursdays, August 15th and 22nd. Auditions are at the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts. They get underway at 6:30. Rehearsals for the fall season begin August 25th. Information by phone at 505-3525. Well, this week we lost another icon from the era of not just good music, great music. Edie Gourmet, the better half of Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, died at the age of 84. Interestingly enough, it was in 1984, when I hosted a program called AM Milwaukee, that I had the opportunity to chat with both Steve and Edie by phone from their California home. I spoke first with Steve, and then he put Edie on.
Edie, how are you?
I'm fine.
Well, that's great. You're louder than Steve. I had to turn the pot down here. Can I ask you a few questions? You got
Why
a minute?
Not?
Okay, great. I threw some accolades at Steve for his new album, and I'm going to throw the same at you. I picked out She's Out of My Life from Steve's album.
Isn't that beautiful?
And I got to pick out Round Midnight from yours.
Oh, thank you.
I was totally moved by that song.
Thank you so much.
It's a beautiful interpretation. I'm going to throw the same question at you that I threw at Steve. He said he literally lived with that song for a couple weeks. What do you do to get in the mood to sing a song like that the way you did it?
Well, it was at the end of a record date, and it was just a song that I used to sing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to just do it with Al Caiola on guitar, Terry Trotter on piano. We just started to do it, and we recorded it, and then Don Costa, after we did it, he put the strings on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just sort of a last-minute, Round Midnight performance of Round Midnight.
It begins to tell Round Midnight, Round Midnight. I do pretty well till after sundown. Supper time, I'm feeling sad, but it really gets bad round midnight. Memories always start round midnight, round midnight. Haven't got the heart to stand holding memories when my heart is still with you. And old midnight knows it too. When some quarrel we had needs mending, does it mean that our love is ending? Darling, I need you. Lately I find your eyes. Let our love take wings some midnight, round midnight. Let the angels sing for your returning. Let our love be safe and sound when all midnight. comes round. Let our love be safe and sound. When oh midnight, when oh midnight comes round.
That song happened.
It really did happen.
It happened.
I think you can tell that in listening to it.
Really? It's a completely unrehearsed, ad-libbed performance. No editing. It just went right through. It just was one of those magic moments that happens oh so rarely.
Oh so rarely. Good way to describe how often life gives us people of Edie Gourmet's variety. Successful, talented, classy, centered, but with a genuine retention of nice. Congratulations to WRFW Radio, the UW River Falls student radio station, the recipient of the 2013 Tom Butler Award from the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference for their outstanding coverage of athletics. Way to go. See what we have for other Spectrum memoranda. Artists of the Month at the Heidi Center include Patricia Mayhew Ham and her stupendous students. The exhibit runs through August 23rd. Also, the multimedia art of Julianne Johnson is also displayed through the 23rd. Series of exhibits featuring stoneware, oils, graphic, pencil, watercolors, acrylics, and photography. An exhibition titled Night Approaches is up at the Phipps in Hudson through September 8th in the galleries. The Phipps Dance Theater presents This Is Cabaret this weekend, Friday and Saturday, August 16th and 17th. Ballroom dance party scheduled for August 17th and September 21st. Yoga classes offered Tuesdays and Fridays. Always lots more. Visit online at thephipps.org. Sending out thanks to Hillary Crusan for promotional aid. Thanks to Mike Mueller for technical assistance on this week's program. We'll do it again next week at 10 a.m. That would be Thursday, and it would be the 22nd of August. Keep in touch via email at spectrumwest@wpr.org if you have an idea of who you'd like to hear from and about. And we'll continue to bring you the arts, the music, and the culture of Western Wisconsin here on Spectrum West. Again, the email address is spectrumwest@wpr.org. Thanks for being with us. See you next week.